too?" said Leonard. "What? I'd prefer a balloon, as a matter of fact. A blue balloon." Rincewind gave Carrot a defiant look. "It's all got to do with when I was six, all right. There was this big, unpleasant girl and a pin. I don't want to talk about it." He looked up at the watching gods. "I don't know what everyone's staring at, I'm sure." "Hook," said the librarian. "Does your pet want a balloon as well?" said Blind-Eye. "We do have a monkey god if he wants some mangoes and so on." In the sudden chill, Rincewind said, "In fact, he said he wants 3,000 file cards, a new stamp, and 5 gallons of ink." "Eek!" said the librarian urgently. "Oh, all right. And a red balloon too, please, if they're free." The repairing of the kite was simple enough. Although gods, on the whole, do not feel at home around mechanical things, every pantheon everywhere in the universe finds it necessary to have some minor deity, Vulcan, Wayland, Dennis, Hephaistos, who knows how bits fit together and that sort of thing. Most large organisations, to their regret and expense, have to have someone like that. Evil Harry surfaced from the snowdrift and gasped for breath. Then he was plunged back down again by a firm hand.
"So it's a deal, then, is it?"
said the minstrel, who was kneeling on his back and holding on to his hair. Evil Harry rose again. "Deal!" he roared, spitting snow.
"And if you tell me later that I shouldn't have listened to you, because everyone knows Dark Lords can't be trusted, I'll garrote you with a lyre string."
"You've got no respect!"
"Well, you are an evil, treacherous Dark Lord, right?"
said the minstrel, pushing the spluttering head back into the snow.
"Well, yeah, of course, obviously, but respect costs nothing."
"You help get me down, and I'll write you into the saga as the most wicked, iniquitous, and depraved evil warlord there has ever been, understand?"
The head came up again, wheezing.
All right, but you've got to promise."
"And if you betray me, remember that I don't know the code. I don't have to let Dark Lords get away."
They descended in silence, and, in Harry's case, mostly with his eyes shut. Off to one side and a long way down, a foothill was now a valley, still fumed and bubbled.
"We'd never even find the bodies," said the minstrel as they sought for a path.
"Ah, and that'd be because they didn't die, see?" said Harry. "They'd have come up with some plan at the last minute, you can bet on it."
"Harry."
"You can call me Evil, lad."
"Evil. They spent the last minute falling down a mountain."
"Ah, oh, but maybe they kind of glided through the air, see? And there's all those lakes down there. Or maybe they spotted where the snow was really deep."
The minstrel stared.
"You really think they could have survived?" he said.
There was a slight touch of desperation in Harry's raddled face.
"Sure, of course. All that talk from Cohen, that was just talk. He's not the sort to go around dying all the time. Not old Cohen. I mean, not him. He's one of a kind."
The minstrel surveyed the hublands ahead of them. There were lakes and there was deep snow, but the horde was not in favour of cunning. If they needed cunning, they hired it. Otherwise, they simply attacked, and you couldn't attack the ground. "It's all mixed up," he thought. "Just like that captain said, gods and heroes and wild adventure. But when the last hero goes, it all goes." He'd never been keen on heroes, but he realised that he needed them to be there, like forests and mountains. He might never see them, but they filled some sort of hole in his mind, some sort of hole in everyone's mind.
"Bound to be fine," said Evil Harry behind him. "They'll probably be waiting for us when we get down there."
"What's that hanging on that rock?" said the minstrel.
It turned out, when they'd scrambled up to it over slippery rocks, to be part of a shattered wheel from Mad Hamish's wheelchair.
"Doesn't mean nothing," said Evil Harry, tossing it aside. "Come on, let's get a move on. This is not a mountain you want to be on at night."
"No, you're right, it doesn't," said the minstrel.
He unslung his lyre and began to tune it.
"It doesn't mean anything."
Before he turned to leave, he reached into a ragged pocket and pulled out a small leather bag. It was full of rubies. He tipped them out onto the snow where they glowed, and then he walked on. There was a field of deep snow. Here and there a hollow suggested that the snow had been thrust aside with great force by a falling body, but the edges had been softened by the wind drift. The 7 horsewomen landed gently, and the thing about the snow was this. There were hoof prints in it, but they did not appear exactly where the horses trod,